Bisham Nikra Ishbelial, and over and there, as they're crossing the Jordan, getting back into Israel proper, a wanton, lawless person came, Mushmo Sheba ben Bichri, Ishmini, and who's from Binyamin, name is Sheba ben Bichri, by Kaba Shofar, by Yomer, and he blows the shofar and cries out, Ein lanu chelek b'David, we have no portion in David anymore, but Nachla ben Yishai, no inheritance with the son of Yishai, Jesse's son. Ish lahalav Yisrael, O Israel, just return to your towns. Then we're going to split the kingdom. And he does split the kingdom, but it takes another 40 years because David will suppress this. Vayalkol Ish Yisrael me'achar David, and the people of Yisrael, as opposed to Yehuda, left David, acharei Sheben Bichri, they go with Sheben Bichri, v'ishu dab dab kum malkam, but the people of Yehuda, who are accompanying them, stay with their king, mini yaden ad Yerushalayim, going from the Jordan back to Yerushalayim. Vayavod David el beito Yerushalayim. David comes back to his home, back in Yerushalayim, after probably about a year. And the king took the 10 concubines that he had left there to guard his house. But he named Beit Mishmeret and put them in a guarded house. Mishmeret in jail. Who's being guarded here? Vayichal came and provided for them, but no longer had relations with them. And they were bound until the day of their death, amanut chayot, living widows. And when we went through this originally, we passed over that pasuk there. Okay, because we'd have to go back. This is the pasuk we're going to go back to in the context. See, first thing he does when he comes back to Yerushalayim is puts his chilak shim into a Beit Mishmeret. And then he goes, Bayomer Amalek al Amasa, the king tells Amasa, who's his chief of staff, Hazek lead issue Shloshet Yamim, go muster up the people of Yehuda again for 3 days, Batapo Amod, and you'll come back here. Vayelach Amasal Hazik et Yehuda, and Amasal goes to muster Yehuda. Vayocher min Hamoed Asher Yado, and he was late with coming back for the time that had been set. Yerma David El Yishai, so David says to Avishai, another one of his generals, Atay Yerel Lano Sheba Bebichri min Abshalom. What Sheba ben Bichri is doing, it will be worse than what Absalom did. That was the focus of what we've been talking about for the past month, basically. Atak hachav de'ad anecha, now go take the servants of your master, that's me, go take whoever is here in Yerushalayim, redop achro, go chase after him, pen latzalo, batzalo arim b'tzirot b'itzil einenu, and lest he find some fortified cities to hide in, and he will be saved from us. So we need to stop him now. So Yoav's people. So Yoav was David's general. Yoav had been fired in the aftermath of the whole Absalom rebellion, because Yoav was the one who killed Absalom and was so angry with David. David fires him and hires Amasa instead. That'll be important. Remember that. But still, the people who are loyal to Yoav, who are the ones who are in Yerushalayim, they go out. Bakreti Bapleti, and we talked about Kreti Pleti, the capital force. Kol Gibarim and all of David's personal heroes, Beitzu Mishalayim, Ludov Achrei Sheba ben Bichri, and they go to chase after Sheba ben Bichri. So, Sheba ben Bichri rebels, David comes back to Yerushalayim, and the first thing he does is does this with his Pilag Shim. And we finessed that last time. So we're going to go back. Okay, so what's the story of these 10 concubines? Eser Nashim Pilag Shim. Remember that? That starts back in the last rebellion, when Absalom is coming to Yerushalayim. David's running away. This is back in Perek Tetvav, so 4 Perakim ago. Vayitzea melech v'chol beito braglav. And the king and all of his household left on foot. Vayezov ha-melech et eser nashim pilagshim lishmar abayit. And David leaves behind 10 of his concubines to guard the house. And then when Absalom comes in, he makes a point with these 10 women. And Absalom comes in, declares himself king. Yomer Absalom el Achitofel. Absalom asks Achitofel, who's his advisor, Avu lachem etza manaseh, go tell me, what should I do now? Okay, I win. I'm now the king over all Israel. I'm sitting in Yerushalayim. Yomer Achitofel el Absalom, and Achitofel tells Absalom, you need to go unto them. Now, we're all adults. We know what the word "go unto them" is, but we'll, for the sake of the recording of the internet, we will use euphemisms only. They go have relations with these pilakshim. And everyone will know, because you have humiliated, you have made your father disgusting. And this will strengthen your hand. That you take the privilege of a king. Let me go back. Only another king is allowed to marry the privilege of a king. So therefore, basically by doing that, he's stating, I am the king. We saw that with Avner ben Ner was accused by Shaul's son Ishbosheth of taking the Pelegesh as a way of saying I'm the king.
Yeah.
That was our understanding of what Reuben and the story of Reuben and Bilhah, where Bilhah is described as the Pelegesh. That was Reuben saying basically, I'm in charge now. That's what taking the Pelegesh is. It's a statement. I'm now in charge. Vayitula Avshalom Oel Alagag. So they put a big tent up on the roof. That, of course, is the same roof that David was standing on, looking out at Bathsheba, kind of Mida Keneged Mida. Vayavo Avshalom El Plikshe Aviv, and Avshalom goes unto the concubines of his father, Lenei Kol Yisrael, in front of everyone. But what he did, I don't know. They simply go in together with the intention of having relations, that this is a public humiliation. Whether it actually happened, we don't know. No, we lost Phyllis. So what is the Pelegesh? We translate it as concubine.
What do you mean you lost me?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you still there? Oh, yeah. You are there. Okay, I don't know what happened. I apologize. I didn't see you on my list.
I look different because my hair is short. You didn't recognize me.
Okay, Phyllis, you're right.
Okay, so now you're gone entirely. Okay, so the question is, what is Pelegesh, and what does that mean? So the answer is, I have no idea. There's no good discussion of that halakhically. There are little pieces here and there. Here's the way the Radak summarizes it. Amru Ratenozah. This is the Chachamim said it in the Gemara in the Bavli. Pelegshim b'lo ketuvah b'lo kiddushim. Pelegshim are wives who don't have ketuvah, which is a prenup. Okay, the ketubah says what happens if the marriage ends, either in divorce or death. This is what the wife gets. Pelegesh has nothing of that. Kiddushin, there's no ceremony. Nashim ketubah kiddushin. It's been an isha that has the full ceremony there. Afal pishin yesh machloket b'zei Yerushalmi. Even though that was what I just said, the Bavli puts it, Yerushalmi has different opinions. Shem Rusham, Ezu Isha, Ezu Pilegesh. What's the difference between Isha and Pilegesh? Rav Meir Omer, Isha Yesh La Ketubah, Pilegesh Ain La Ketubah. Rav Meir says, no, it's the Ketubah that makes the difference. You know, it's the what happens after the marriage is over that matters. Chacham Omerim, Echad Zev, Echad Zev Yesh La Ketubah. That no, both have Ketubah. Neither have Ketubah. Ela Isha Yesh La Ketubah, but Utnai Ketubah. The Isha has what's called Tanai Ketuvah, the conditions of the Ketuvah. Pelegesh Leish Ketuvah has the Ketuvah about what happens after the marriage. Eila Tanai Ketuvah, the conditions of the Tanai, the conditions of the Ketuvah, which the Aruch HaShulchan explains, are the traditional obligations of the husband to the wife, which are Mizanot, Kesut, supplying food, clothing, and having relations when she wants that. So there are no. So a plegish, basically, in the second opinion, the husband has no obligations toward her.
After their divorce.
No, before. The second opinion is that the ketubah means there is obligations after they're divorced or after the husband dies. But during marriage, there's no obligation of him supporting her in any way.
Wow. Why would anybody stay with that person?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. We don't have Pelegeshim. The Rambam says, you know, explicitly that Pelegesh is only permitted to a king. That normal people can't do that.
Well, what about the whole Pelegesh Begila thing then? That guy wasn't a king.
That's true. That's a good counterexample, right? And one might argue simply that he was wrong. Right. You can't say that he was doing the, you know, he was a great guy with everything else that he did.
So didn't Yaakov have peleg shame?
That was the point, that no, he did not. The shivchot were always called nashim. They're all full wives. The only time that term pelegish is used by Yaakov was with Bilhah, when Reuven goes to Vayishkov, Reuven at Bilhah pelegish aviv. And that's the point. She's called pelegish because that's the way Reuven looked at her, not the what her legal status was.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm given that. We've talked about that before.
Mm.
And Susie just gave us the link on the chat. It's pretty disturbing, including the soundtrack. Oh my!
Yeah, well, she does like beautiful Jewish songs while you're watching this all happening. They're bringing in all the Shulchan and the Menorah and stuff. Anyway, sorry. You can look at it at your leisure, but it's pretty crazy stuff.
Okay, well, don't build. You know, basically, the argument is that when you're doing that, you're building golden calf.
Yeah.
So don't do that. And then the Radak summary of a PK and Suga Gemara Kamar Meir, that the Gemara stands like Rameya, but that a Pileges has no ketubah. There's no, that basically there's no permanent connection between them. Okay, and that from our point of view, the Pileges does not become part of the husband's family. This is a relationship that's purely for physical needs. There's no ongoing connection there, and we'll see that halachically, that's reflected in the fact is the Ritva on Yevam, where it talks about this. There's no issur of incest there. Having someone who has a pilegesh can then marry that person's sister. They're not connected, related at all. That's, that only applies in the case where there's a real marriage. A lekin kedushin sharia afilu b'pilegesh, that if there's no kedushin, then it's fine. It's halachically acceptable. I'm not saying fine there. And similarly, the Aruch HaShulchan says abal eino ochel peroteha, that the husband has no claim on the wife's, on the pilegesh, the concubine's income, eino yorsha, and doesn't inherit from her. This lack of connection is bilateral. He can inherit. It doesn't count as being a relation for pidyon shivuim and all that. They are a man and a pilegish are not related.
And what if there's a child? What happens to that?
So I'm sitting there trying to figure that out. And what seems to be clear from the way it's used elsewhere, no one explicitly says that they don't inherit the status. Okay, that's the part of the idea. The idea that the son of a pilegish will not be a melech of the melech, right? I think they inherit the financial estate because that's independent of being married. Just being biological child allows someone to inherit. That's what I think the Gemara is saying in there. There's no good halakha because it doesn't seem to be relevant today, though there's some interesting questions whether it's relevant or not. But we have this idea that the children of Pileg Shim aren't part of the family, right? We see that by Abraham. Abraham gives everything he has to Yitzchak before he dies. To Abraham's concubines, Asher Abraham, Natan Abraham Matanot. Abraham gives them gifts. Beishalchem Yitzchak and sends them away. Odin Ochai, while he's alive, came out as Kedem, sends them away to the east. He gives them money and then sends them out. And some we see by Yiftach, who is not quite the same thing, not quite, let's say, a pilegesh or not, but Yiftach, the shofet. Yiftach,
so 1 minute. If we have Avraham here,
yes.
What's the source that only a king could have a pilegesh?
That, I don't have enough answers on that. Look, the Rambam states that flat. You can certainly argue that A, this is before the Torah was given, and therefore that's not the same thing. And B, you could argue that Avraham has the same status of king in terms of the leader of the people. I don't have a good answer for that. Okay, and yes, so the Rambam states that flat out. I don't know enough. So if you're interested in having a pilegesh or buying one for Jack, then talk to your local Orthodox rabbi. Okay, I don't think it's a good idea.
So this has nothing to do with Rabbeinu, whoever.
Gershon, right? That was talking about multiple wives.
Okay.
Okay. So, the pilegesh, nobody is
still okay. maybe only
that is okay. I will say that that is a good question. That question brought up as an issue for the Agun Aguna issues. Can we go with Pilegesh? That doesn't somehow violate the. I really don't want to go enough into there because I don't know enough to say. Clearly, all the kings of ancient Israel had Pilegeshim. Why they did that, not Nashim, I don't know. I'm just going to quote this line from Yiftach here. But Yiftach Giladi, Yigibor Chayel, that Yiftach was a warrior, but who ben Isha Zona? Anyone translate Zona here? But Yolad Gilad Yiftach, Gilad his father Yiftach. But Taylor Isha Gilad Lobanim and Gilad, real wife. So he really had other children, by Lubane and Isha, and they grew up. And they sent Yiftach away. You will not inherit amongst our father. You are the son of a different woman. They kicked him out, right? Which is usually that expression there is why Isha Zonah is usually not translated as a harlot in there, because they're not quite that strong when they're kicking him out. You're just your mother wasn't a real wife. We're kicking you out. But from my point of view, what it implies is that any sons from these Pilag, Davis Pilag Shim, could not inherit the Malchut. Okay, that all of his other sons are all jockeying for who's going to be king. We have Amnon and Absalom and Adoniah and Shlomo and all that. Nothing about these B'nai Pilag Shim. So I'm going to be Malam and Zechut. I'm going to assume that David, when he's leaving these Pilag Shim behind as he's running away, he means well. He's not abandoning them. He has no idea that Absalom's going to do anything to them. He takes his wives and children with him when he's running away, because what's Absalom going to do when, as soon as Absalom comes in? He's going to kill them all. Those are rivals for the throne. The children of the concubines are not a threat to Absalom. They're not real sons of the king. So he's leaving them behind to cover his tracks. So that's what he's leaving these Pilegeshim behind.
But...
yes.
Maybe he wasn't afraid he would kill the children because they weren't a threat, but he should have been afraid that he would rape the Pilegeshim.
Exactly. Right. So I am
the tradition, you know.
I am Melamed Zechut that he wasn't thinking about that. I agree he probably should have done that. But I don't want to criticize David too much. We've been doing a lot of that. Okay, so it was right. In retrospect, it was the wrong thing to do. But I wasn't a sense of a banning. So this is, so he's leaving them behind basically to kind of, he wants to leave somebody behind to cover his tracks, right? Doesn't want everyone to know that he's run away. He wants somebody to keep the lights on there. This is the way the Abarbanel puts it back there. Quoting the Rabbah, so it shouldn't publicize the fact that he's running away. But the house would still be there. He has lights on timers. We'll see someone walk him going away on foot. Wouldn't realize that was David on foot. He'd normally be going on whole, horses and donkeys. Yeshia Melch Asran Hashim, Pilag Shim, Lishmar Beitov left him behind to keep the house there. So why is he
leaving? Danny, this is a repeat of the Michal story now. He leaves her behind so he can get away.
Interesting. No, I hadn't thought about that. You're right. I mean, he does run away from home, from Shaul, with Liam Michal behind. I'm not sure. That's interesting. I didn't connect that. I'll have you give that shear next time, okay?
No, I'm just saying it's sort of repetitive.
When one wants to, you like making these kind of connections there, but I'm not sure what to do with that right now.
Yeah.
On the other hand, after he takes Michal back and then doesn't, has no children with her either. Just like these Pilegeshim, he doesn't have. Right, Michal is also given to another husband, right? Palki ben Laish.
Mm-hmm.
And David may take her back, but doesn't have relations with her anymore, and has no with her. So there is the parallel there. Actually, is closer than I might have thought. That gets really interesting. That's going to take us a far afield from what I have to say, so I have no one to do with that. So I'm going to go back to these 10 Peleg Shim that were left behind that he has now put in a Beit Mishmeret. And why 10? Why those 10? Because the answer is, because as far as we can tell, that's how many Peleg Shim he had. And that gets to sort of a more midrashic counting, because how many wives did David have? In Hebron, he had 6 wives.
Yeah.
But we have that. We'll do Levi Banim b'Hebron. When he was king in Hebron, he had these 6 children, these 6 sons, and it lists them: Amnon from Achinoam, Kilav from Abigail, Absalom from Macha, Adina from Chagit, Jephthiah from Abital, and Yitram from Egla, Esha David, which is normally assumed that that's Michal. So that's just, he has these 6 wives in Hebron. And then he gets to Yerushalayim, and we don't know much more, but it says, Vaykach David od Pelegshim v'nashim b'Yerushalayim, Acher bo mechebron. And he marries more, and he takes concubines and wives in when he's in Yerushalayim. V'yidu od David b'nim v'not, and he has more children then. So how many spouses, consorts, does he have in total? The Mishnah famously calculates that from Natan's accusation at the time of Bathsheba. Natan tells David, Ataish, you are the man, and Bet Nalakot, Beit Yisrael, Yehuda, I've given you control of Yisrael and Yehuda. And if you don't have enough wives, I could give you like this and like this again. The Gemara figures, well, Kahena is, he has 6, so he could have taken Kahena another 6 and another 6. 18. When the Torah says, Lo Yarbel Lo Nashim, here in Source 13, with the rule of Avo, that the king shouldn't have too many wives. We assume that Natan is telling him, you can take up to 18. That's the assumption of the limit of how many wives. She's just shaking her head there. I don't know if you're thinking,
I'm just the idea that 18 is not too many. That's all.
And obviously from a king's perspective, and even from most people's perspective at that point, marriage was not a romantic relationship. It's a financial one. And you married more wives in order to cement your political alliances. We know that from the Barbie movie, Princess and the Pauper.
I'll just say that Ellie and I talked about getting concubines when, you know, it was becoming challenging to have little kids and working. I said, just take some concubines. But I didn't realize the kids would have a different status. So I'm glad we didn't do that.
Right. Well, the idea there would be that you need an extra wife in order to do all those traditional wifely duties. And that's what the concubine status would be, really the secondary status there.
But, you know, also,
way of thinking about it,
these women would have comfort and some protection, you know.
Right. I mean, this is not, I don't think that anyone's saying no. I know, obviously you don't say no to the king, but no one's assuming that they are living a bad life here. And it says explicitly that what David is doing when he goes back, and he no longer has relations with him, comes back and puts him in Mishmeret Beichel King, and still supports them fully. But the only thing he's not doing is relations with them. Looking at the concubines here, so basically this is the Radak who says, look, David has 6 beforehand. He marries Nashim Upilagshim. We know he has at least 10 Pilagshim, because that's the one he left behind. Nashim is plural, so it has to be at least Pilag. So presumably he's got 6 wives beforehand. He gets 2 more wives here, and that's 8, means he has 10 total concubines. So the 10 he left behind was the total number. That's why he left that many, because that's how many concubines he had. This is a Radak's kind of calculation with that. He blew Razal, the Chazal said, we assume that David had 18, right? That he maxed out when he married more Nashim Pelegshim. Beit Nashim, Beit Pelegshim, and both those are in that count. And Yeshlomo had thousands. And Yeshlomo was wrong in that, right? I mean, explicitly, he, you know, going past the 18 was far too many. They're shoe, and they made the drasha, lo yabrel no shim, yoter mishmona esrei. They said, you shouldn't have too many. Yeah, the 18 was enough. So, m'chuzeh asher achar kabbalah, b'pasuk, osipa l'achar kahina v'kahina. They learned that out from this pasuk of God, you don't need to take Bathsheba away. God would have given you kahena v'kahen, permitted you kahena. You could take of many lots of more wives. Sheish nashim hayulo. He had six then. Amar kahena v'kahena him yud bet v'od kahena him yudcha. Up to 18. Bini matzana lo sheish nashim b'chevron. So he has six in Chevron. Kodem bo Yerushalayim, before he comes to Yerushalayim. V'omer v'ikach tavid o pilak shim v'nashim v'Yerushalayim. He marries more in Yerushalayim. Matzana b'barachom yipnei Avshalom sheniach eser pilak shim. So he leaves the 10 pilak shim behind. So we now know about 16 consorts. Yimkein shtayim nashim levad l'kach Yerushalayim. So then the nashim must have been two. Eser pilak shim, 10 concubines. One of those we know is Bathsheba. That was one of the wives. And we have this mysterious eighth wife of David that we know nothing about. Somebody needs to write that novel. Okay. We have a list in Divrei Hayamim of other sons of David. Presumably of this mysterious lost wife. But we know nothing. We're just calculating he must have had that one. So going back to our story. So he's left these 10, he leaves his pilakshim behind. They are, I don't know if they're raped, but they're actually publicly taken into a tent by Avshalom. And he declares that they are tsurot ayom matan, amrut chayim. They are bound until the day they die. What we now call an aguna, okay? That language of aguna comes from Gilat Rut. And if everyone realizes that, that's when Naomi is telling her daughters-in-law, Rut Varpa, Atumar Naomi, Shabna benotai lama telachni yimi. Right, we just at Shkua, we just learned this. Right, Naomi tells her daughters-in-law, why go back? Why should you come with me? Hold li banim b'me'ai b'yulachem l'hashem. I don't have no children. I'm not going to have any more sons. That you should wait for a Yibum relationship. continue on. Halahen Saberna, you would, even if I had a son, would you wait for them? Ayashi Gadlu, it told us that these sons would grow up. Halahen Te Agena, would you be an Aguna waiting for them, unable to marry? Without being married. Okay, that's the language. And the Gemara Aguna refers to a woman whose husband is missing. With no proof of being dead. It's been taken in modern halachic terms to someone who, where we know the husband is refusing a get. So that's a much more modern problem, because though probably even 100 years ago, you just beat the guy until he voluntarily gave a get. But we don't do that anymore. So some of these cases, you kind of feel that they deserve that, to be beaten until they do that. But so now we have this language of aguna, but the same language of tsurot ayom matan. There are these pilakshim are tsurot. They're bound. They can't marry. Even after David dies, they still can't remarry, ever. But the problem with this declaration that David says, okay, now you are now tsurot, is that this is true of all of David's wives and concubines. It's not a new thing. It doesn't matter what happened with Avshalom. And this whole incident, that's what happens to the wives of a king. This is the halakha in the Mishnah Torah. That wives of a king cannot marry anyone else. That no one can use the servants of a king at all. That was a story with Avishag, who is serving David, is not actually married. Adoniyahu, and Adoniyahu wants her as a statement that he is actually going to be the king. They'll come in Malachim. About Ishtosha Melach, the wife of a king, cannot marry anyone else ever, not even another king. Afilo Melach. So his wives are also Agunot, independent what happened. In no se'el minuto, Ogur Ishtosha Melach, a king cannot marry the former wife of another king, halachically. So the question is, what is David doing by saying you're now tsurot after coming back? Because what happened with Absalom is irrelevant to that. They weren't forbidden to him from point of view of adultery because they were anusot. They had no choice in the matter. That doesn't forbid a wife at all. So going back here, it's, you know, so what is he doing? Now going back to this pasuk here, right? He takes Esther Hashem Hashir Hiniyach to Shmur Abayit. And it doesn't say why. It doesn't say because of what Avshalom did. That's not, clearly that's not what was going on here. So what is he doing? Why is he publicly saying, you are now anusot? You are now rather turot. That was true independent of what happened. So the Chiddush here seems to be that he's saying, Alehem Laba, I'm not going to have relations with you anymore. Not talking about what happens after he dies, that's not changed. But right now, you are part of my consorts, but I'm not going to have relations with anymore. I'm separating myself from all these concubines that I've had. I like women, I'm not going to do it anymore. But it's hard to understand. Also, because at this point, David is really old. Okay, he's 66, which is not that old, I will say right now. But in David's case, we know he's going to die at 70, and he's really frail now. I mean, we know the next story in the narrative life of David is what? It's the beginning of Sefer Melachim, that Haftorah, right? But Melach David Zaken Baba Yamin, David was old. This is within 3 years. He was covered in clothes. He couldn't get warm. Let's go find a young woman. She will stay with the king, and she will serve him. And she will lie with him. That will warm you up. Against the state, that's the state that David is in now. He's not in relations with anybody. So they go look for a appropriate young woman. They find Abishag. They bring her to the king. And she's very beautiful. And she is a nurse for the king. But she stays and serves him. The king was not intimate with her at all. Okay, David's not positioned to be intimate with anyone. He wants to deal with these people like shit. This is Abarbanel talking about Avishag and why we're learning about Avishag at all. So this is the beginning of Sefer Melachim. Hine nichtav kan in Avishag hashunamit. The shlosha sibot. So the three reasons why we bring in Avishag at all to this story, because really the whole story is about the succession and the conflict between Shlomo and Adoniah, but who's going to succeed David? Why do I care about David's personal life? The Navi brings it in for three reasons, the Abarbanel says. Achat, the first reason. Kidei lo dia she David hayazaken v'chalash mod. It tells us how frail David was at this point. But nidkarker damo, he was so cold, kolkach she'im hayot she'yichasu b'gadim, and the fact he was covered in blankets, bloya mitchamem, couldn't get warm, so he needed another a woman for him, trying to warm him up. Despite the fact that David, by his very nature, he loved women, he liked having mishkal. We will not translate literally because this is a public statement of learning Torah. He liked his physical activities with women. And we know that from all the stories we've seen of David before that, Bathsheba being a prime example of that. Despite that, at this point in his life, he can't do it. He's already lost that power. So much, he had no relations with Abishag, even though she was there with him. Didn't have relations with her. That's how Barbanel's coming. And I'm going to quote, however, the very strange Agada that Gemara brings. And it says that it wasn't David, not so much that he wasn't capable of being intimate, but he held himself back. Again, we're all adults, right? We can handle this. So this is reconstructing a dialogue between Abishag and David as she's lying in his bed. Abishag Amra, Nin Savan. Abishag tells him, we should be married. Okay, I want to be one of your wives, not just a sochenet who's here for my physical body. Amar la isritli. So David tells her, in the world of the Gemara, I can't. The Rashi says, I already have my 18 wives. I maxed out my limit. They won't extend my credit card anymore. I can't marry anyone else. So Amra Le. So she says to him, Chasra leganva nafshe lishlama nakit. If the thief can't find anything to steal, he acts like an honest person. She's mocking. You get the metaphor there? So Rashi's going to explain the metaphor here. Rashi, sheganav chaser she'ino motzei makom lignov. Is a thief can't break into anywhere to steal anything. Machazik atzmo, pretends, acts to himself, acts like banava, like he's human, humble, ish shalom, like a person of peace. Klomer, meaning, Yibnei says, Akanta, you are too weak and you can't do it. But tashat chuchacha, you're too weak. Ato mer she'ani yasur alach, you're giving the excuse that I'm forbidden to you. So, Amar Lahu. So then he says, that's not right. And he announced, he tells his servants, Karuli Batsheva, bring Batsheva to me. And that's what the public says, Batavo Batsheva, El Amelach HaKedra, Batsheva comes to his chambers, Amar Yehuda, Amar Rab, Ota Sha'a, Kinecha Batsheva, B'shlosh Esrei Mapot. At that moment, Batsheva had to wipe herself with 13 towels. The Gemara doesn't hold back on these sorts of images here at all, okay? Right, again, Rashi points out, Shabbala Gimabiot, he had plenty of, he was physically able to at that moment, but he had it. The Barbadel says, well, you know, not so much a call. I'm sorry, did someone say that? That what Barbara says is that, says what we see from this kind of story is that David wasn't having relations with anyone at this point. This is Barbanel, Sebastian E.T., the other reason for bringing up Avishag. So, Diana Lakatu, Koze Lakadamat Yedia. This is an introduction so that we should know. Lagid Shabbat Shevu Shar Neshe Hamelach. Batsheva and the other wives of the king, Loya Baot Lafana, weren't there in front of him. So that when Batsheva comes in, and says, wait a minute, Natan said, we all know the Haftarah, right? But Natan tells Batsheva, go to the king and tell him that Adonijah wants to be king instead of you. That's a great surprise because Batsheva hasn't seen him for how many years? Because the king, the queens wouldn't go in front of him. Lo Lishartot, not serving him. Lo Lishgab B'cheko, wouldn't lie with him. Lo Lugam L'Roto, wouldn't be seen there. This was a great surprise that Batsheva would come in. Yavishag, Shumit, Haitam, was there. The only one who was there was Avishag. Was there Lefanavishar Tolcha Mo to serve him even more? Lachin Nitbahel David. That's why David was so surprised. Kesha Abat Sheva, Vesha Malach Moshe Eskar, and he asked, "What are you doing here? What's going on?" And Abba Manel has again says he has three reasons for this. We're not going to the other one's not relevant. So we have hints there that David, when he comes back from to Yerushalayim, he makes a public declaration, basically, that he is no longer having relations with his wives. That's basically what he's saying here. So Yerushalmi suggests that this is David intentionally. Remember, David loves women. We already said that he is, as what's the word that we use here? Yerdaf achar hamishkal. But he's making a point of this. He's denying his own desire. It's part of his tshuva for Batsheva. He wants to make a point. You know, what wrong with Batsheva was me giving in to my Yetzer Hara. I'm not going to do that anymore. And there's a Yerushalmi. So over here, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Pazi B'Shem Rabbi Pazi B'Shem Rabbi Yochanan. When it says Batiyan Tzurot Ayom Matan, when they were bound they until the day of their death, Malame Shea David Makaltan U'Mekashtan. That David kept them dressed, gave them jewelry, and brought them in front of him every day. But Omer lead Sohara, and he told his Yetzirhara, Tavata Davar Asulacha, you maybe desire something that was forbidden to me, Hayacha, by your life, O Yetzirhara of mine. Shani mit Avecha, I am going to stimulate your desire, but Davar Habiturlacha, that's something that's mutar, that's permitted, but I'm still not going to do it. Like going on a diet and keeping these donuts sitting on the table, and I'm going to intentionally hold myself back from them. That is punishing himself. And the Rabbeinu Yonah, Shai Tshuva, says that explicitly as well, source 22. Amru Ravatena, Zechron Ravacha, the Meshka Tuv, when it says, Batina Tshurot, Ayom Matan, Amru Chayim, they were bound the rest of their lives. Chol Yom Ayah David, Mitzaveh, Lehativet Roshan, that David every day would command that he would, that his concubines should get in their makeup, Matan Tramukahin, the Kashtan, and put their jewelry on, in order to stimulate his desire and to subdue it. That he can control his Yetzirah, that was kapara for the act of Batsheva. They were brought onto the roof for Batsheva, so he's going to make a point. He is no longer going to have any relations at all for these last 3 years of his life. And that's the Loya de Abba Abishag. Also, he refuses himself. Because this Yitzhar was the root of what happened with Bathsheba. Everything we've read about in the second part of Sefer Shmuel was all the consequence of Bathsheba. He needs to get past this. And we brought this Madrash before of when right at the beginning of the story of Bathsheba. This is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Amar David Lefanav Hashem. David tells Hashem, Rebbe Shel Olam Bachanini Yuneseni. David tells God, test me. I want the reward for having been tested, and I will pass the test, and it'll be wonderful. Amar, so Hashem says, Menaseh Lecha. Okay, I'll test you, just like I tested Abraham, and he got his reward. I'll test you, but Vidna Milton, I'll do something for you. Bahak, in this matter, I didn't tell Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov what they're being tested on. I didn't warn them in advance. Here's the test. Here's what's going to happen. For you, I'm going to tell you what's going to be on the test. I will tell you what the test is going to be. This is going to be a matter of your lust. You love women. That's what your test is going to be in. Yeah, and immediately we have the story of Ahilat Erev, Yakum David me al Mishkavo. David gets up and he's on the roof and he sees Bathsheba. And of course. So Phyllis asks, what's Yitzchak's test? That is a good question. I don't have a great answer. There's a wonderful MS Yaakov about that. I don't have a perfect answer for exactly what the test of Yitzchak. I think Yitzchak's test, and I've given this in the Chumashir, was when Yaakov fools him and takes the bracha that he intended for Esav, and Yitzchak says, and Yitzchak, who is the master of din, of right and wrong, there is no leeway, he says, "Gam baruch yeh." He acknowledges that the bracha will actually chal. That was Yitzchak accepting that since the nevuah happened, that was God's will, and I will allow it to happen even though it was the wrong thing. I believe that was Yitzchak's test. I can bring the, you can look at the Yaakov on that incident. You can look at his discussion of that question. When the Gemara says that all the Avot had tests. I don't have a great answer for Yaakov's test though. You know, a test being something that goes, you have to go against your nature in order to serve God. That's the idea of Nisayon. But in the case of David's test, his test was, he sees this woman there presented for him who clearly is meant for him, right? It's exactly the same story as Yehuda and Tamar. This is the Mashiach is going to be born from this woman. This is all right. God clearly wants me to do this. And the correct answer is no, she's still married. Don't, despite the fact that you know this is right. You know, the reason you want it is just your desire, your lust. So Amar Yerav Yehuda, Shehafach Mishkavo Shalayla L'Mishkavo Shalyom. So what David said, so Rabbi Yehuda says that when it says Vayakam David Me'al Mishkavo, got up from his bed in the evening, meant that he was in bed during the day. That was his way of trying to defeat this test that he found out of. Who's showing me cake? He's going to try to feed his Yetzer Hara by satiating it. He spent all day with his wives, and he figured, okay, now I'm not going to have any problems. He forgot the rule. There's a small limb that belongs to a man. that the more you try to satisfy it, the hungrier it gets. Marivosavea, the more you starve it, the more satisfied it is. So his saying that his strategy was trying to maximize relations with his wives, that failed. So now he's going to go back and say, no, I'm not going to do it at all. I will not sin this way. And we know what happened with Bathsheba. We have the Masorah from Leonard Cohen. Right, your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof, her beauty in the moonlight overthrew you. So now he's come back. He's an old man. He's come back from this rebellion of Absalom, which again was part of the consequences over the course of the past 30 years of what happened with Bathsheba. He's got to fight another battle against Sheba ben Bichri. And he wants to say, okay, that was all behind me. And this is the Mishpatot Zahav, a contemporary commentary on Shmuel says, Shriach Lamar, you have to say, why does he do it now? Shalifnesha David Yatzala Milchama im Sheba ben Bichri. Before David goes out on this to go to war against Sheba ben Bichri, but said David Lasot Chizuk Ubedak Abayit Beito Shalom. He wanted to put his own house in order. That Sheva ben Bichri should not have any advantages because David still has this sin, this lack in his own past. No defect. No defect. This sin hanging over his head. He doesn't want this there anymore. And strengthen this was, he was going to be even more holy. He's going to control his Yetzer Hara by putting away his concubines. And since he will obviously have greater self-control now, he will be able to lead others in the right way. That he wanted to increase this, let's see, you're there, Yesodota Kedusha. Increase the foundations, the holiness in his own house. That's what he's trying to do here. He's going to fight Sheva ben Bichri by doing this extra kapara for the sin of Bathsheba. But I'm going to argue that David's wrong. Okay, because this story of Bathsheba, the tshuva is already complete, he's paid the price. Everything that's been happened so far is that. We talked about him coming back in this Tehillim that talked about Ashrei Adam Lo Yechashev Hashem Lo Avon, that he has done Shuva already. He has undone what damage could be done. He supported the son of Bathsheba. He's come with the husband of Bathsheba. He has allowed, when he's running away from the kingdom, he's allowed the Arug to go back. He's not claiming this is about me anymore. I am no longer in control. And this is the part that he himself says, that this is the way Hirsch translates the pasuk, happy he is to whom, even if he sinned, the Lord need not describe iniquity, and he decrees in that ultimate fate. David is no longer has this avon. We say that David has achieved tshuva already, so that that there's no need for David to keep torturing himself over this. And we kind of pointed out that David's looking backwards. He needs to look forward. Great quote from Winston Churchill. It's always that the general's war office is always preparing to fight the last war. David should have dealt with the Bathsheba and his tshuva before Absalom happened, and Amnon and Tamar and all of that. Fighting it now, none of this, the Sheva Bichri has nothing to do with what happened with Bathsheba. As we talked about the last time, this is about the split in the kingdom, about how the people want to serve Hashem in their own way, and David wants to assert control over that. Right? This difference between the Beit HaMikdash and the Egel HaZahav. David needs to look at the people here and not say, well, I'm going to basically torture myself in order to prove how pure I am. That's just not the question. And so he's going to go through this war here, and he's going to win. It's going to be Sheva ben Bichri is going to end up with his head cut off. But it's still not going to solve the ultimate problem there. So I think that's what's going on with these Pilag Shiv here. It's sort of a sign that David is still fighting the last war. But we need to move forward. But before we go, that it is now 10 o'clock. I'm going to look at a Perek Tehillim, but we'll do that next time. Okay, next week I am working. So I'll do this the week after that. Okay?
Sounds good.
Any questions or comments?
Yeah, it struck me when you said marriage was always for political reasons. And It's interesting that Shlomo, the one who inherits the kingdom, that relationship wasn't political.
Which political? Oh, you mean Bathsheba?
Yeah. You know, the one relationship he has that just whatever, love, lust.
Right.
And also that, you know, it's from his big sin that comes his inheritor.
Right. We've talked about that a lot. We talked about the concept that that's what Tshuva Me'ahava means. It's Zedonot Naseh Lo Kizuchuyot. Exactly that sense, that your sin becomes a zechut. And that David achieves that, you know, uses his past to build and become a better person. And we also talked about the Yibum idea, is that the son who inherits David can't be his son, right? He can't be there in order to create a dynasty. That was kind of my point with that David has to be Hashem's son. David has to be willing to give up this child. Remember we talked about the Yibum model for that?
Yeah.
Janet, you'll fill me in.
It's been a while, but I do remember we talked about that.
Now, what makes the difference that by Shlomo, it says, Batelet Ben, doesn't say Batelet Lo Ben. Wasn't his. David has to be willing to give up because it can't be about him having a dynasty. It has to be about the people. He has to be willing to give up his children. Say, it's not me.
Yeah. I won't say I don't remember. I'll say, oh, I missed that shape.
You remember we quoted Rabbi Foreman looking at the whole Shlomo splitting the baby.
And
Rabbi Foreman looked at that. That was where I got this idea. That Rabbi Foreman said that this was Shlomo looking at himself, that Shlomo was being split between David and Uriah. Does that sound familiar at all?
No.
And he has to be able to, again, that's the give up the child in order to say you are the true father.
No. All right.
I'll send you back the links on that. We did talk about that.
You know, when your idea of the Egel and the Kruvim came into my head, other stuff went out.
Knocked everything else out.
Okay. Well, I try to keep track of one thing at a time. That's why I have to write all this stuff down here, right?
Yeah.
Get it all written down.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Annie.